Welcome to the Brad and Body Podcast. You already know who we are. We wouldn't be here, so let's not waste any more time. Here's Bradley.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Wattened and Brad Podcast.
Oh, wow, I've been promoted.
Yeah, you've been promoted. No, it's great. How are you, Wattened?
I'm very, very well, thank you, Bradley, and really looking forward to catching up with today's guest because he's got a great history in our game and brought a lot to it and had his travails along the way, so it should be a really interesting journey. I'll let you get to the intros.
Well, it is an intro and it's going to go for a while and it will probably only touch the edges, but we'll get into it as much as we can. Born in Jackson, if I'm not mistaken, but then in Florida, that is, and then raised in Nebraska, played his college basketball at Arizona State, and during his time, he earned 3 Pac-10 All-Academy selections out of his 4 seasons. In 2004 is when he came to Australia, joining the Northwest Tasmania Thunder in the SEABL, which we now know is the NBL1. During his season there, he won 4 Player of the Week awards on his way to claiming the league MVP. In his rookie season, Body, he averaged 35 and 15. Not a bad effort. He signed with the New Zealand Breakers in the 2004-05 NBL season, was very impressive in his debut, and for only God knows why, they then released him. He returned back in 2005 to the Bendigo Braves, and he helped in the SEABL again, and he helped them into the title and taking them to the ABA National Championship. He was named the MVP of the Conference Grand Final with 43-13.
Who was that? Who was that that he beat?
That was the day I officially loved his game and hated him, all right, because I was the coach of the opposition. He was unstoppable. We threw everything at him. Following that season is when he joined the mighty Perth Wildcats, and that's what we know him about. He made an immediate impact. I think he had 27 in his first game. He then went on what can only be called as an outstanding and stellar career with the Wildcats. During his time, 4 NBL championships, 2 NBL first teams, 3 NBL second, and 2 NBL third teams. He became naturalized in 2008, and of course, what else? 2008 Beijing Olympics, playing for the mighty Boomers. After retiring from the NBL, he's been very prominent in the business land, but also a bit of my teammate in the commentary team, and I got to call a couple of games with him, and he's a lovely man. And recently, in a beautiful video, if someone hasn't seen it, Andrew Vlahov announced it in the team, but it was fantastic. An illustrious crew, and his number 42 jersey will be retired by the club this coming January. Of course, I'm talking about Sean Redditch. Great to have you, mate.
Oh, thanks for having me. It brought me back a long, long history there, and a lot of good memories there, being able to play, especially coming over to Australia and be able to play for such a long time. It was something that was out of the realm of possibilities. I kind of thought I was ready to jump into construction management, and got the call from Tasmania. Mark Radford there is now the assistant coach the Jack Jumpers. And, I tried to play professionally. No one gave me a gig. This team in Tasmania, I didn't even think they, Tasmania was an actual place, but sure enough,
it is.
Sure enough, you look it up on the map, there is a place there. And, I was thankful for the opportunity and just tried to make the most of it.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Brad mentioned that you went to Arizona. Was that the Arizona Wildcats?
No. See, the Wildcats were actually our rival. I went to Arizona State, the Wildcats kicked our butt most weeks. I think out of the 12 times, or no, sorry, we played them twice a year. So out of the 8 times, I think I only won 1 against the Wildcats. So as fate would kind of have it, I actually despised the Wildcats before I came over to Australia, but they've definitely grown on me now.
Yeah. That's a great story.
So Mark Radford, how did he come by your name? Like, were you post-college looking to play professionally somewhere in the rest of the world? I know you said you were getting ready to get into construction, but Mark must have got your name from somewhere.
Yeah, look, I did have an agent at the time, I actually don't know exactly how it all kind of panned out. I was playing with a team, Athletes in Action, and we used to go around and play against teams in the preseason for colleges. And and luck would have it, we actually played against, I think Chris Paul was his first game ever at Wake Forest. and we'd flown the night before. It was an awesome tour, but I mean, exhausting. You're playing like 12 games in like 16 days all over the country. So we played in like Washington the night before, flew across the country, lining up. I didn't even know who Chris Paul was, but sure enough, I don't know what he had that night, but he would have had over 30. We're up by two. Chris Paul has the ball. They come and set an on-ball screen. I get switched on Chris Paul, blows by me like I wasn't even playing defense. And we're up two, so I'm thinking, oh, I'm just going to go hammer him, make him make free throws, and I absolutely smash him. And somehow he makes the layup, hits the free throw. So I'm feeling terrible at this point. I always thought I was a smart player, but that was a silly play right there. And luck would have it, about 2 seconds ago, we threw the full court length pass, a bit like Christian Laettner against Duke, and our guy caught it, hit a turnaround three to win the game. So I think there might have been some stuff through that athlete in action that got me a little bit of, recognition. Because in college, I was, Arizona State. I rode the bench for a couple, my sophomore and junior year, probably only midway through my senior year, I cracked the starting lineup. And then, I was at 8 points per game, nothing that you look at a resume and say, this guy's going to go play professional basketball.
So your athletes in action, we used to have them come and tour out here as well. Is that the group that at halftime used to come out and sing songs? Someone would be playing the guitar. You'd sing some religious songs to the crowd?
Yeah, it was a Christian basketball team. So there was a ministry side to it. So they usually, there was a message at halftime or after the game or whatever. It was a lot of fun. It's kind of a player's dream. You're just playing games. There's hardly any trainings. You're just flying around the country playing games. But yeah, they do tours all over around the world as well. So I know they do come out here. They would play some NBL teams and Siebel teams in the preseason as well.
I definitely remember them. I just want to touch really briefly. What got you into basketball? Was it like a family background? Where did it start?
Look, I think I signed up for my first basketball camp when I was year two. I had two older brothers, always playing sports. I actually grew up, soccer was my favorite sport growing up. And played a little bit more soccer than I did basketball. But I guess when you get into ninth grade, you're 6'5". You get to dunk for the first time. You kind of figure, well, you look around the soccer landscape. There's not too many 6'5" soccer players running around. So I thought basketball might be a little bit more of a better opportunity for me. The thing I loved about basketball is I could go out on my own on the driveway. I could go play one-on-one. Just a sport where you could kind of really develop on your own terms.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I didn't need a whole 10 to go out and play. I could go play one-on-one. I love just being in the driveway for hours. I mean, my dad put up a hoop inside our garage because Nebraska, it's freezing. So when it was too cold to be on the driveway, we'd go into the garage and I'd be playing one-on-one against my brothers. And I actually kind of think that helped me. I kind of had a little bit of an awkward game with my footwork and stuff, but when you're trying to score over someone that's taller and you got a garage ceiling that's pretty low, you got to get creative with the shots. Nice. You can't shoot your normal. So in some ways, I think it kind of benefited me. But I just love the, I grew up watching, Michael Jordan and Pistol Pete videos and just trying to figure out any way to get better and improve. And I love that aspect of the game.
Do you watch the World Cup now, like being that you love soccer so much, or no, it's gone?
No, it's one of my favorite things to do is to watch the World Cup. I don't know. I've always had this appreciation for the U.S. soccer team, the national team, right? Because I just kind of grew up playing it. My brother played semi-pro. He's actually now a part-time owner in an MLS team in Nashville, SC. So I've always loved soccer, but I love the World Cup and, I'll probably with two kids and the business and everything, I didn't, I'll say I recorded the games. I didn't watch them live when you got to get up at 3 a.m. I would turn my phone off. I'd go coach in the morning and then I'd come straight home, leave all the social media off and throw on the game and watch it. So, yeah, I was pretty proud of the way the U.S. played and Australia played. So it's awesome to, you know, I thought they did outstanding and did their countries proudly.
So now getting back to basketball, you've had very successful time in Tasmania. Is that where you got recruited by the Breakers? They recruit you after seeing you playing in the Seabowl?
Yeah, so their assistant coach at the time, Wayne, was he was from Tasmania and just happened to be back, I think, on holidays visiting family and came and watched me play at Devonport there. And I can't remember who we played. I just remember the game. I got smashed in the head and I had blood all over. I had to put a bandage all around my head, played the rest of the game with that. And then, yeah, he came up to me after the game and we had a chat and said if I'd be interested in playing at the NBL level. And I said, absolutely. And that's kind of how it happened. So, you know, just, you know, sometimes as a player, you just got to get a little bit lucky, the right person in the crowd.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you just never know where it's going to take you.
No, I couldn't agree more. Like for me personally, I remember Phil Smythe hurt his shoulder and that was the luck. Terrible for Phil, and I love him, but that was the luck it was. You just needed that one spot to open. New Zealand, the worst decision in club history to release you, right? And they're still kicking themselves for that. But I do want to talk about that. When that happens to you as a player, you obviously went back and Bendigo and did what you had to do, but how did you cope with that emotionally, I'm talking about?
Oh, look, it was tough. It was kind of that first time where you kind of get the sense that this is, I mean, you know that people say, oh, look, you get the pressure of the basketball, it's a business, but that doesn't really, I guess, resonate with you until it actually is a business. Right. So, it was kind of that, you know, probably from outside the first, team that I tried out for, the Cornhusker Bank All-Stars, where I got cut, you know, I've had a lot of success, playing basketball. So, you know, and you just kind of realize that, you know, if the team's not doing well, you know, the first people they're going to look for is the import. And, you know, I mean, and you look back on it now, I mean, I think before I went there, they'd been trying to get Marcus Timmons, but I think he was just out of their price range and he went back to Cairns, Taipans, and then Cairns actually cut him. And I think, you know, we were kind of struggling. We were a bit up and down, you know, new club. It was only a second year in the league. And so, you know, it's probably from a, you know, looking at it from a basketball point of view, you know, we're probably not going to get into the finals. Let's shake things up and see if something happens. But it was tough. I mean, you know, I felt like there was times, actually was coming off probably one of my better games against, we just won Brisbane on the road. You know, I was coming off the bench. So it was one of those where, you know, you get 15, 20 minutes, some games, you know, I was productive, other games definitely could have had a more of a bigger impact, but, it was kind of the role that I was asked to play and trying to do that. But you do get the sense that it is you know, it is a business at the end of the day, and you got to try and win, especially at the professional level. And, you know, it was hard to take. Probably, you know, we would talk about soccer. Actually, I was living in downtown New Zealand, and I didn't even touch a ball for probably a week after that happened. I went down, I went for a run, went and worked out. There were some people playing soccer down there. I just went and played pickup soccer for about 5 or 6 days. I'd meet them down there at lunchtime. Had a blast, and I think it just got my mind off of basketball. But then a week later, you know, I set that goal to go play Bendigo and hopefully get back in the NBL, because I felt like I could play at that level. It was just a matter of at the right situation.
So that right situation was obviously at Perth, as history has shown us. But getting there, was that when Mark Radford, who had coached you in the Seabowl originally, was he one of the assistants in the Perth Wildcats program? But was that your connection? Is that what opened the door?
No. So, you know, actually Mark came over after I'd been at the Wildcats for a number of years. When they brought in Rob Beveridge, they were looking for an assistant coach. And, you know, I have a lot of respect for Mark and, you know, him as a coach and person. And So you know, definitely gave him some glowing recommendation to Bevo when you brought him over. But you know, at the time, actually Scott Fisher was the coach. Dave Ingham was the assistant coach, and you some of the weird things that happened to get me to Perth. But Lucas Walker at the time was playing in college. He was going to come over for a trial with the Wildcats. And at the last minute, he decided to go back to college. And so the Wildcats at the time, you know, that financially, they probably weren't the strongest as they were now. So they had this plane ticket from Melbourne to Perth, and they didn't really want it to go to waste. And so we're driving on a bus to Knox. I think we're playing Knox that night. And Wayne Larkins, my coach at Bendigo, got a call from Scott Fisher. Hey, would Sean be interested in coming to Perth? He'll need to be on a flight at 6 a.m. tomorrow morning. And so Wayne comes down the back of the bus. Hey, Wildcats want you to go for a trial. Bad news, though. You got to be in the flight at 6 a.m. So I'm on the bus. I don't have any gear other than what I'm going to play in that night. So we play Knox that night, travel back to Bendigo. I don't know what time we get back, at like 1 a.m. Yeah. I get back, get back up at 3 a.m., drive back to the Melbourne airport, fly over on a Sunday, I think it was. And then I had a 3-day trial over here in Perth. So, you know, definitely Lucas Walker is on my Christmas card list every year for deciding to go back to college.
Mate, that's like Benny Hill music, like all stars just aligned. That is unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, and you get to Perth. I was staying at Scarborough Beach, for those that have been over here, WA. Yeah. I mean, I just walk out there. I mean, it's a world class beach. I'm like, this place exists in the world.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm growing up. I'm in the cornfields of Nebraska, and. You know, having to shovel snow and scrape ice off the driveway. And here I am living, you know, 100 meters from the beach for 3 or 4 days.
I am picturing coming from Nebraska. You then go to Tasmania. You then end up at Bendigo and they fly you to Perth. It's a little bit different. Yeah, a little bit different.
Yeah.
Can I ask why they didn't call you the day before Bendigo played the Comets in the grand final? That would have been really suitable. But anyway, we won't talk about that. Sean, can I ask who was the owner?
Sean, really
tell
does.
Me. Oh, tell me. Who was the owner of the Perth when you moved over there? Was that Blahoff days?
Yeah. So Blahoff was the owner. I think he had just taken over from, I think at that point, him and Luke Longley were kind of joint up.
Yes.
Up
yes.
until, I don't know the exact time frame, but I think
they took over
gave
from,
his.
Yeah, I think from Kerry Stokes, wasn't it, from memory? Wasn't?
Yeah, I reckon.
Yeah, they took over from Kerry Stokes. And then I think, you know, I think my understanding is they were just losing too much money. So Luke just said, Andrew, you can have it. And then, so at that time, Blahoff was the owner, Scott Fisher was the head coach. And it was, you know, there's definitely that connection. And, you know, Ricky Grace, that was his last season as well, the season, you know. So my first preseason game, Ricky was having his testimonial game before. So it was kind of that changing of the guards, I guess. With, you know, Ricky leaving and obviously Blahoff and Fisher and just that unbelievable lineup they had for so many years.
Speaking of which, I just realized that means you've actually played with all of the great guards that came from, I mean, obviously there were great guards prior to Ricky, but you know, Ricky's sort of regarded as the number one guard or was for a long time. So you played with the whole string of them, the Jermaine Beals and the whole bunch of guys that came in through, didn't you? You're in a unique position to give us an assessment of Bryce Cotton. Where do you rate him?
I mean, as far as in the scheme of all the guards at the Wildcats?
Yeah.
Look, I'm not sure I'm the best person to speak on that from Ricky's point of view, because I only got to see, you know, I watched the NBL his last season. I didn't get to play with him. You know, I've seen thousands of highlights. I've spoken to a lot of people and how unbelievable player he was. But I mean, you go Ricky and you go Bryce, and then I think there's daylight between anyone else. You know, I tell everyone that Bryce, best player I played with by far. And, you know, and I played with some great players. Kevin Lish, you know, right up there, you know, especially in his prime. And, you know, Jermaine Beal was an unbelievable shooter. You know, got to play alongside Damian Martin and, you know, have a lot of success with him. But Bryce, when he comes, yeah, I mean, I've never seen a guy like, you just felt, just give him the ball every time down the court, he's going to make the right decision. I mean, it's just a unique skill set. You very rarely see him make a poor decision. And we could, you know, we signed him. We were dead last.
Came into Sydney. I'll never forget it. Came into Sydney, he dropped 28 or something. I'll never forget that.
Came into Sydney. And I actually, you know, in training, I thought he was a very good player, but I didn't know he was like that. And then watching the first game, and this was the end of my career, so I was, you know, I was playing like 5-10 minutes a game. So, you know, we're just over there. I'm just in awe of this guy. First game, I'm like, oh, wow. And I actually was a teammate. And I always tell the story to people, like, not only is he a great player, but, you know, sometimes you can get some teammates that you're probably not going to hang out with outside of basketball. But, like, the first night we're on the road, you know, I've got two kids at home. I want to get my sleep. And Bryce is watching TV and he's like, hey, you know, do you mind if I finish watching this show and then I'll go to sleep? And, you know, just to have the courtesy to actually ask that question, just kind of tells you the person he is and the teammate he is. And, you know, I love watching him play, and he's an unbelievable player. You know, people talk about, you know, the greatest import of all. He's definitely the best that I've played with since seen in my time here in the NBL. But, you know, I know there were some fantastic imports throughout the, and you guys are probably better at knowing that. But from my point of time in the NBL, he's definitely had the most impact.
So hard. I mean, I look at people, you know, I love Todd Lichty. I just love that guy, the way he could play. But then you've got Grace Crawford. Like, it just keeps going on. It's unbelievable. Hey, I wanted to ask, did you actually say no to him and pick the TV up and throw it across the room, or did you let him watch the end of the movie?
Oh, no, I let him. I put my noise-canceling headphones and went to sleep. So,
I do have a question, though. Now you're playing for the Wildcats, right? And I got to ask, is there a little bit of extra, because you and New Zealand had some great battles, was there always that little bit, I got something special for you guys?
Oh, I think there's always. I mean, that's human nature, right? Human nature. And that's being a competitor. I got a lot of, you know, when I came over, actually, Dylan Boucher had been cut from New Zealand as well. So we kind of bonded. We were both at the Wildcats. I knew him from the year before. And then, you know, he goes back to New Zealand and just, you know, he was awesome for them and his impact. But I knew a lot of those guys all the time in the world for Mika Bakona and the way he played. Loved that battle. Like, you just knew it was just going to be nonstop the entire. I mean, you try to block Mika Bakona out, it was, I mean, you woke up the next day and you had bruises all over. I loved it.
Yeah, and that's, unfortunately, and there's positives and negatives, but that bit has gone from the game a little bit, like now, you know, like you look at the players like yourself and Mika. I remember people used to always ask me, you know, if you were picking a team right now, you two were always the first that I would say. That's the two you want, because you build teams around them. Damian Martin was another one, obviously. But it does have gone, and people, you know, like, so different now. Do you see the difference in the game now? Like, it's so fast. So, you know, the stretch fours and everything. What do you look at it?
Yeah, look, it is. I mean, the NBL these days is talented. I mean, I don't think I would have got an opportunity. If I say fast forward, you know, 15 years, and I'm coming same route now, I definitely don't even get a look in from that point of view, because the level of imports is just second to none. From my time, I think that the level of play, just the athleticism. But I will say there's just something, you know, I watched the first probably 10, 15 games or what are they at? 10 games now in the season, and, you know, the thing I loved about last game that I saw the Wildcats with Brady Manick was, you know, he was in there fighting for the rebounds and he got a couple little cheapies and those things. Just, I think those are the things you need as a team to be successful. And if he can continue to do those things, I think it's going to really help the team. You know, it's great to sit on the 3-point line and shoot all those, but you know, you get scouted. Teams are going to take that away. Can you find another 4 to 6 points or, you know, 2 or 3 rebounds and plays to kind of help your team? Cause those are the things that kind of separate.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you about the Wildcats. Like what's your feeling looking at them at the moment? Because they've had such an unprecedented prolonged period of just perennial success. To sort of see them miss the playoffs last season and now be a little bit precarious, let's put it that way. Is there a way to sort of fix this team, or do we just have to be patient, or have they got enough talent? Like what when you look at them, what do you see?
Oh, look, I thought they started the year out really well. Defensively, they were super active. I think they were giving up 75 points a game. And then from that point on, it seemed like they kind of got away from playing that defense that kind of got them, you know, grind out wins when they're not playing well offensively. Right. They got that huge win in New Zealand. I think hopefully that'll, you know, give them, spur them on, give them some confidence going forward. But, you know, it just feels like they need to find that identity, you know. Can they win when they're not shooting the ball well? You know, I think they're capable of it. But I think it's just kind of getting everyone in their roles, learning a new system. And I was telling someone this the other day that, you know, they come in, the teams come in, they're not sure what the Wildcats going to run under John Reilly. So maybe the first 3 to 5 games, they might be able to surprise themselves. Now they're scouted. Now they've got to make those adjustments. And I think they will. And they've got some leaders there that can make that. But it just kind of got to get that sense. They've got to try and maybe figure out a way to be able to win when they're not shooting the ball well.
The way the Wildcats teams used to do.
Yeah.
That's what you guys used to do. You know, if you had defense was your sort of stock and trade. So if you weren't having a great offensive game, you could still grind it out. That's what I think is missing right now.
Yeah, and they just haven't been able to do it consistently. So, you go into a game, you got to be able to hang your hat on something. I think they're still kind of finding out their identity. But they've got some pieces there. I think it's just a matter of putting it all together. I think, you know, they've got some guys that probably haven't had the best start to the season. I think Todd Blanchfield's probably one of those that, at some point it's going to start dropping for him. And when it does, when you got all those 3-point shooters out there. But I do think they, you know, teams are just loading up on Bryce. They're denying him the ball. So
yeah,
I think at times they might even just put Bryce at point guard. It's harder to deny the point guard the ball, bring him down, and just hopefully he can make things a little bit easier for the guys as well.
Yeah, it makes sense. Sean, what are you doing now? Obviously, retired and going down that path. What do you do?
Yeah, look, retired 2017 and it started Redditch basketball. I still wanted to be involved in the game. Started with one school down at my kids' primary school, Wembley Downs Primary School. We started a before school program. It's grown to, I think we've got about 45 to 50 schools now. And we're working with the Perry Lakes Hawks, which is kind of the local basketball association. We work with their Wobble Kids, and we got camps. And so just growing the game. I mean, basketball, I'm sure it's exploding all over. But here in WA, I mean, kids, parents, everyone loves. I mean, the NBA, the NBL, the Boomers, the Opals, all that just going in. You're just seeing people are seeing basketball exploding. It's great to see, and just trying to hopefully, put the ball in the hands, and you never know what's going to happen. You never know. You might have a kid from Nebraska pick up the ball and end up over in Australia. So it's great to be, you know, I'm probably in a fortunate position where I can still be involved in the game and get to coach my son's basketball team. And just still be involved in the game. And, you know, when I get the chance, do the commentary, which I love, and be on the sideline. So it's
I love that story.
Still involved
with the kids.
In the game.
Yeah, I coach my kids, and it's just such a blessing. I hear you.
Yeah. Well, look, we're nearly finished, and there's so many areas we haven't even touched. I wanted to ask you your toughest opponent. I want to talk about that serious injury you suffered that was supposed to be career-ending and proved to be nothing of the kind. And I want to ask you about your Boomers experience, but really the thing that where I wanted that to go was, how did you feel? Because I'm sure you would have been watching the Olympics when the boys won the bronze medal, having been part of that whole process over 50, 60 years to see them achieve. Were you watching that game? Were you jumping off your couch or were you buying a pizza somewhere?
Yeah, no, I was definitely watching it. Actually, I think we had at the Perry Lakes Hawks, who I coached one of their rep teams. And my son plays for them as well. We had a quiz night that night. So it was the basketball community, and everyone knew the Boomers game was going to be on. So they had the TV on. And so we had about 100 people in this room, and we were all watching the end of the game. And it was just, I mean, everyone was cheering, high five. And so it was actually a pretty cool moment from that, because you just had all this whole basketball community, and everyone knew what this meant. I mean, how the heartache that we've had, that swing throw against Spain. I mean, that was just, that was just dejecting. I couldn't sleep the night after that. and just to see them and just, you know, I was just really excited for Patty Mills as well, because a guy that just put his heart and soul into that Boomers. And, you know, he rocks up every year and just plays unbelievable. So for him to get that reward was pretty cool as well. And, you know, he was kind of his first Olympics was in 2008 when I went there.
Oh,
you know,
wow.
It was kind of his coming out party when he dropped 20 against Chris Paul and Jason Kidd. So, it was pretty cool to see that come full circle.
Sean, I just want to touch one last thing before, because it's been great. The retirement of your singlet. I saw Vlahov. I assume, I'd love to hear, did you know what he was going to say? Did they just say, hey, come along to training? But that touched me, hearing Andrew Vlahov talk about you. I can only imagine what it felt for you.
Yeah, look, it was. So they, you know, John really actually called me up and said, hey, can you come have a chat to the team? It was during their FIBA break, so I thought, you know, that they'd kind of had a few weeks of struggling, and that isn't out of the realm of possibilities. You know, we used to have ex-players come in a lot of time. Vlahov would come in and give us a bit of a spray when we weren't weren't playing well. But so I just kind of thought, I said, oh, well, what do you want to have a chat about? And he said, oh, just, you know, what it means to be a Wildcat and everything. So, you know, prepared the speech, got there. The boys were were training. They were just finishing up their kind of pre-workout. They went up and did the scout, and then had me get up in front of the team, had a chat. And Vlahov was there. So I kind of thought that maybe he was going to chat as well. So I was going to be the nice guy, kind of, and then Vlahov was going to come in and give him the spray type of thing. finished the speech. And lo and behold, my family had been kind of hiding back in the office as well. So I thought they'd gone to school. They'd gone to the office kind of waiting, and they'd been in the office for like 20 minutes. And they're like, how long is Sean talking to these guys? I said, no, they had to do the scout first. Then I gave a little chat. And then, so then they brought them in and, you know, when Vlahov, it was a bit emotional. I didn't realize it, you know, you just kind of get that. It was a bit like when you retired, you don't really realize how much it's going to mean to you. But, you know, a few games ago, I got to go to the arena, go to the game again. You just look up there, you see those jerseys, those names. I mean, it's just like, you just pinch yourself, really. You don't even think that's out of the realm of possibilities. I mean, we talked about it. You know, I came from New Zealand. I was just thankful to have a job, let alone like the Perth Wildcats, a team with so much success, so much recognition throughout the world and the basketball community. And now you're in this illustrious, club of players that have just had so much impact, not on the NBL, not only on the Wildcats, but the entire league and Australian basketball community. So it's kind of humbling and, you know, definitely a great honor. I don't take it lightly. That's for sure.
It's fantastic. We've now reached that point, Sean, where we like to wrap it up by throwing a bunch of names at you. And whatever your immediate reaction is, the first word that pops into your mind, or maybe a sentence, or maybe someone deserves an anecdote, but we're just going to fire a few names at you, see what you come back with. First one, Jesse Wagstaff.
Ultimate teammate.
Nice. I like that one. I'm going to go with one, Mark Worthington.
Our competitor. Love the battles that we had.
I got Trevor Gleeson.
Demanding, you love it at the end of the day, especially when you see success.
Yep. Yeah, nice one. Another coach, Rob Beveridge.
You know, player's coach. Love that, you know, he'd text you after the game, hey, love what you did there. And he just kind of felt like he was one of those guys you just wanted to go to battle for every night.
Nice. Okay, I've got Damian Martin.
Oh, so many there, but just relentless. You know, he's just his ability to impact the game defense. I've never seen it from anyone I've ever played with, and not even close. It was impressive.
I did have my last one as Andrew Vlahov, but I think you've said enough about him, so I'm going to go a little bit right because we can obviously get the feeling. I'm going to go Greg Heyer.
Oh. Just love. He would do anything for the team. I mean, if it was run through a screen, it was, you know, the guy with the shortest arms in the world, and he's grabbing 15 offensive rebounds. It was incredible. All heart.
Oh, mate. Sean, thank you. We could, like what he said, we didn't touch on a lot of things. You've been amazing. You are, what can I say, an outstanding career, fantastic for the NBL, and it's because of people like you, our league is where it is today. So yeah. I do say thank you so much. We loved having you on here. We love the opportunity to talk again to you one time. And good luck with the kids, good luck with the basketball, and congratulations again on that huge honour and thoroughly deserved of the singlet.
No, great. Thank you, guys. And thanks for, keeping, the former players and everyone in mind. You guys have such a great perspective on that because you've been in the league for such a long time. So it's great that you guys, I love reading the stuff and stuff that you guys put out because, it's just such good perspective that you guys have of the league as a whole, you know, not in the last, say, 5 years, but in the last 40 years.
Oh, what a good man, Sean Randy Gs, hey? That was great. Good interview. Enjoyed that. Sorry we went on a little bit longer for this to our patron listeners, but it was just too good.
I'm looking at all the questions that we didn't ask. And I'm like, oh, God, we're going to have him on again.
Especially that injury. A break. That happened in Adelaide, if I'm not mistaken.
That was terrific. Yes, yeah.
And I remember, you wrote something like, this is it. This could be his career, which everyone thought the same thing. Like, he couldn't even fly home with the team. That bad. Yeah, I remember that. Anyway. All right. Well, let's change angles here a little bit. Let's talk WNBL. Some interesting games over the weekend. What did you take out of that? I thought Bendigo did what they had to do. Go on, what did you think?
I thought that was a great win by Bendigo and Townsville, which is always difficult to win. They managed to get two free throws for the game, so they really the umpires really helped them a great deal. But they got across the line. Annalie Maley hits the winning shot. Yeah, that's fantastic, although there was still time for Townsville to win it if they were good enough, and obviously they weren't. They got a tough round this week coming down. First time they've come out of their home base, so we'll be able to get a decent assessment of Townsville. I was very disappointed with Southside. Lauren Jackson's injured, okay, but you're boasting the greatest depth of any team that we've seen in Yonks. You've added Monique Conti after her AFLW sensational season with Richmond. Mm-hmm. And then you've barely at home got past Sydney, who was, battling to get their first win. And then you've come into Adelaide and had them on toast by 14 points and died in the butt. It was just amazing.
Munro and Bell were awesome, 23 and 2. They were great.
Yeah, have a look at Bell's complete line.
It was 23, 5 and 14.
And a couple of steals and there's some blocks. She was really busy.
Well, Munro had 10 rebounds as well.
Yeah, yeah.
It was a great game.
They played really well. I'm really disappointed with Southside. I just thought they were better than that. They were full court, zone pressing, got 14 up, as I say, and then when Adelaide came back, they just ran
out of ideas. Let me stay here with the WNBL because I'm going to ask you who's hot in a second, but I want to talk to you games this weekend. We're coming into round five now. We've just completed round four. Listen to this for a lineup. Starts Townsville at Melbourne, Southside at Perth, Flames at Capitals, Townsville at Southside. So there's the big doubleheader you're talking about, Boomers and Southside. And then Adelaide go to Bendigo. Mate, there's some great games.
Yeah, there really is some good games. And then I'm really happy for Canberra and Sydney because both those teams have yet to win a game. That'll change after this round. And they deserve a win. They've had some good battles lately and just haven't been able to get across the line against better teams. So that should be a real good game that maybe we're not expecting to be a good game.
Yeah, I agree with you. Yeah. I watched the Flames game yesterday. They're playing good. They just sometimes the finishing and, turnovers at wrong times and stuff. So that's not uncommon with a new group. So it'll be good. Hopefully they can turn that around.
Brad, who do you think is hot? When you hot, you hot. In
the air, when you hot, you hot. Annalee Maley for sure for me. I thought she was fabulous yesterday. On Sunday when for the Kings at the King Dome when the Flames took on Bendigo. She was great, right? And I really loved what she did. But that game winner was outstanding. She's just another level. And I think she looked like she's just got more confident. I mean, obviously she was great last year, then the bronze medal. And I just watch her just roll around the court. She's just comfortable in her own game. That's what I love watching.
I'm just a little disappointed in the aftermath of the Townsville game where she copped a fair bit of abuse from some boorish, disgraceful section of the Townsville crowd, which BA's integrity is looking into. I don't know. It's just fans have got to know where the line is, and you don't cross it. You're paying to watch athletes play. They've played. You're beaten. Take it on the chin. Don't turn it.
Well, can I say that Bendigo, they had four people in double figures, and Annalee 12 and 16. I mean, I don't want to say she's short, but she's not tall. You know what I mean? For a player to get 16 rebounds, she's just a workaholic.
And the thing is, that's not unusual, Brad. What amazes me is that that's her strength. Box her out. For God's sake, box her out.
But then you listen to a Sean Redditch a couple of seconds ago. It's like trying to box out Mika Vekona. You just can't. All right, who's hot for you in the WNBL?
The Adelaide Lightning. That was a very good win, win against Canberra to start the round. Mm-hmm. And then they followed up by flogging Southside, come from 14 down, led by in the 20s at one stage, were really good. The imports absolutely stood up. Kirsten Bell had her best game, as you just ran through the numbers a little while ago. And Jacinta Monroe was terrific. But Steph Talbot wasn't miles off a triple-double. Lauren Mansfield had, I think, 8 assists to go with double-figure points. And Izzy Borlase, who's just an absolute revelation. She got into a bit of foul trouble, didn't play a lot of time, but she was perfect from the floor, 4 of 4, 9 points. They looked really good. I'm very happy for them. They're on their way. Lost their first three games in difficult circumstances each time. Now they're 3-3 on a three-game streak. Watch out for the Lightning. Let's move good to stuff. NBL.
NBL it is. All right. So let's first off, give me who's hot. When you hot, you hot.
Well, for me, it's Milton Doyle from the Tasmania Jet Jumpers.
I
think what he did in that game against Brisbane, especially in the end where you needed someone to step up and he just said, okay, I'll just follow me, boys. We're going to the promised land. Mm-hmm. And, they got there and comfortably in the end. So I was very impressed with him, very impressed with the Jack Jumpers anyway because Brisbane were up after having beaten Perth. They were feeling good about themselves. They'd made that into a real contest. But when push came to shove, the Jack Jumpers were just too good, and Milton Doyle was the best of them. What about yourself?
Xavier Cooks. That guy's been playing really well, but that dunk he did yesterday, and that, that's the second best dunk he's done this year. What I mean? So, I got to interview him after the game, and I was like, mate, that was, it was quite funny, actually. But before we went on air, we have a screen in front of us, and the screen shows, and they showed the dunk, and even he did the old, look at that one. Oh, then he realized it was him, So I actually said to him, that's awesome, mate, like that dunk. And I asked him on air, he said, nah, I still prefer the Isaac one. But, he's gone to another level, that guy. He is unbelievable.
Yes, he has. The reality is, for me, if you take him out of that team, if he gets injured or anything, if there's any reason he's not playing consistently, they become, quite ordinary.
Well, I'm going to go to this week quickly, this round. There's a few good games, but nothing beats Thursday night, the opener of the round, New Zealand versus Sydney, 1-2. Who you got?
Where is it?
New Zealand.
Yeah. I reckon I've got the breakers for this. I think they that last round I had to do a show with Joey, right? And Joey was convinced that they were going to drop one of the games. Well, we picked the wrong one because we thought they might drop the South East Melbourne, or he did. And losing that game to Perth, I think that's probably just a little nudge that that they needed. I reckon they'll be rearing to go in the same way that Sydney was rearing to go when they lost to Cairns in unfortunate circumstances.
So, now, I just got to touch on something, though. Robert Franks. What was he thinking? What was he thinking, mate? Beautiful free throws. Fantastic. And then catches the ball and think, we ran. Mate, tuck it under your arm and run. He's trying to run out of the stadium.
What is he thinking?
Give me your rattler. Give me an answer. She's up all over the place.
I can't give you a rapper. You give me, you give these listeners the thrill of a Rosen Rattler.
Yeah, I'm going to give a thrill because it was my thrill, Luke Longley. Now, for those that didn't watch the game on Sunday when I commentated the Kings, I got to interview Luke Longley, and it was all about the ownership of the Kings and life and everything. Mate, he is the most humble, beautiful man. I know that sounds – unbelievable. He is such a great guy. And, you know, I was talking to people before the game saying, I'm going to interview Luke. Oh, he's a legend. He's great. And then after the interview, he came up to me and says, was that all right? I hope I came across all right. I was like, mate – you're freaking Luke Longley, mate. You can say whatever the hell you want. Just the humbleness of this guy. You just want to cuddle him.
He's a big teddy bear. He's lovely.
Yeah,
he's
awesome, wonderful human being. Absolutely awesome. So that was my rat. Like, give me a nasty.
Here's a nice contrast for you. I'm on the side of the refs. I think it's time for the refs, okay, who have been terrible generally and who have players and coaches in their faces constantly to start throwing some tech fouls around. Like, just get everybody complains about every freaking call. Give them a tee them up. Give them one warning, tee them up. I've seen a coach, not going to mention their names, Dean, but running around on the court, carrying on, give him a tech foul. Shut him up. You know, I saw for the first time in ages somebody called for palming the ball in the Sydney Adelaide game. Right? I haven't seen that. I was like, I just fell off my sofa. I thought I was in the Twilight Zone. And then there was a travel call not too far after that. I think this is great that we're seeing a little bit of officiating. But the officials, I know they're not great, but boy, can we just get out of their faces, throw some techs around. I want to see some tech fouls. No more of this delay of game rubbish. Give a tech foul.
Okay, you heard it here first. I love it. Thank you. BOTINAGY.com for all his stuff. He's phenomenal, buddy. Thank you to Piranha Media. Thank you so much. And remember, Burger Boss, we love them. Thank you so much. Body, have a great week, mate. And everyone, thank you. Keep the messages coming along. We absolutely love it. Thank you, Short Redditch. Body, final word for you, mate.
Yeah, good night. So, listen, I hope we sent an ambulance around to Sean Redditch's place because, you know, when the interview finished, somebody slammed a door and with a gust of wind sent him flying off his chair. So, you know how back in the day, what are you doing, Brad?
I'm doing the flopping rule. It's the flopping
the
rule.
Flop signal. No, mate, we're an audio medium. People can't see it, but it is funny.